Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's JAS call on Tuesday the 15th of February, we have Rafik Damak, Eugenie Benjima, Sébastien Bachelet, Evan Leibovich, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Aubrey Doria, Alan Greenberg, Dave Kisundwayal, Sintra Suknanan. From staff, we have Carla Valente, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And apologies today noted from Michaela Nalon, Tony Harris, Olivier Crétin-Leblanc, and Alex Kakuru. If I could please remind everyone to state their names for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Rafik.
Thank you, Gisela. Hello, everybody. Thank you again for joining this today call. As first item, is there any update of your SOI and DOI? Okay, hearing none, then we move to the next item of our agenda. As usual, we will start with reporting of each work teams, and then we start with the work team A and B. Please, Tijani, do you have any updates or something to report?
Yes.
For
yes.
Work? Thank you. Please go ahead.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Rafiq. This week, I discussed a lot with some of you, and I had the communication also by email with Carlton particularly. And because I have gathered criteria from the World Bank from a lot of sources, and when I get in deep inside what I have gathered, it was only criteria that we already did in our milestone report. So it is not now, because our mission now is to find methods of demonstrating the need. And this is you can't find this anywhere. I wasn't able to find this in the sources I found at the first. So I had a lot of discussion with some of you and with other person here. And for example, last night I discussed a lot with Andrew, and we agreed together that we will not find. Precise metrics for it. It is not easy to find precise metrics. I tried to establish, if you want, or to write something about it. And Carlton sent me today what he think about the question, and I think it is almost the same what I was thinking about. Means that we need to see the incomes of the applicant, and how to find it. It is another question, and the proofs are very important. So we can think about the bank statements, or what he called Carlton at the moment. He called that. The qualified statement of account, and the second thing he called it qualified statement of affairs. So all these are subjective proofs, if you want. We need sources, not qualified but secure sources, and this is the main difficulty. I thought about going to the central bank of the country and ask about all the because he can give you a statement from one bank, and he has a lot of accounts and not another banks. So we need to know if he has given all his banks of his bank's accounts. So it is still. If you want, I am thinking. I am discussing with people, and again, people with whom I didn't discuss. Please give me what you think about the question, so that we will have something that that is the point of view of the whole group.
Uh, Thank you very much. Just is it possible to share that in the wiki so everybody can check and review the document? Because I understand that there was a lot of discussion between you and other members, but we don't have anything in the mailing list, so maybe...
You're right.
Yes.
You're right. Okay, so I will share it, yes. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. I saw that Avery and Eric are in the queue. Please, Avery, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I guess I have two questions. One is, have you defined what the criteria are at the next level down? As yes, we defined financial need as one, but have you gotten to the point of actually defining what financial need is in respect to these applications? And then second, I guess I just want to mention a little concern. Okay, I hear beeping. Am I still with the call?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay,
yes.
I'm still with the call. Okay, because I heard some beeping. The second question is, you know, the balance between, yes, we have to go further than self-declaration of that need, but, you know, getting to the point of trying to get all banks for information verification seems like we're moving very far on the verification scale, and I'm wondering if there isn't going to be some sort of intermediate, you know, some sort of, and I hate myself for saying this because I hate these groups, but some sort of group who is professional at asserting the truth, checking the truth of an application, and that as opposed to we or ICANN getting into the business of verification, whether looking into verification bodies who can review the truth of an application is an intermediate that might be worth looking at. Thanks.
Okay, so your first question is our mission exactly is to set the, what is the to say what is the financial need, and there is a proposal from for example from Carlton who says less than $250,000. And I didn't put figures in my text, but it is not. I don't think it is the main thing. The main. If you want, the main important thing. The main important thing is to know how to verify this income. We can discuss together. We can say it will be. I don't know if the application is $185,000. The incomes have to be less than this amount, for example, or less than 100. I don't know. It is. We can discuss. It is not the difficulty for me is not this. The difficulty is to prove the need. How to prove the need. And second, if there is bodies that are experts in verifying the income the application, it would be good if we can have someone from them to help us.
Eric, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. This is Eric Bruner Williams. Tajani, I don't often say this, but I think you're going the wrong way. There will be gaming. Our problem is not. Our problem is to make gaming rational. So, if we create a consequence for a fraudulent application, for the fraudulent misrepresentation of need, then we have done sufficiently well in as the designers of a less than easily gamed system. So I propose, rather than chasing the verifications as you're doing, which is possibly a unbounded problem, that we accept that there will be some misrepresentation, which is going to reduce our finite pool of resources, assuming we ever have any resources in the first place, but that the consequences of fraud are the loss of the assets, so that the applicant who considers gaming has to consider the risks and the rewards of doing so. The rewards the reward of fabricating need is actually quite small. We don't actually have a great deal of resources to hand out. Yet the cost for the fraud can be quite high, such as the complete loss of the delegation immediately. Thank you very much.
So, Eric, you are proposing that we only define what is the need, what we mean by the an applicant in need. And the verification is not the problem. We ask only for, a declaration from the applicant, and that's all.
Tijani, actually, I was saying that we need to state what the threshold is, which was the point of Avery's question and several others in the past and probably in the future as well. That is some potentially quite arbitrary threshold. In addition to that, we need to state what the consequences are of misrepresentation. Now, the consequences of misrepresentation are built somewhat into the existing draft applicant guidebook. That is, ICANN does at some point say that they will rap someone's knuckles if they do bad things. Knowing how ICANN conformance has worked in the past, that's a fairly hollow threat. A non-hollow threat is what I think we should be making, since we have very finite resources, if any, to allocate. So a very small benefit comes from cheating. A very great cost comes from cheating. We also need to state what the cost is and make sure that it is a credible threat. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Avery is on the queue.
Yep.
Yes, Avery.
Yeah, go ahead. Thanks. I think I largely agree with what Eric has said. I do think we need to go a little bit beyond just self-statement. I think that, and that's why I think any number of bodies in the world, you know, who do investigating the truth of an application, and we just, you know, and I'm sure staff who has perhaps not done it on an economic basis, but has done it on many other bases of basically having a group that investigates the, you know, does the due diligence, as it's called, on various applications, can certainly give us advice on how that's done and perhaps on picking one. I think in terms of not having many resources, hopefully that changes. But it's not only the resources we have, it's the matchmaking we do. And I think that there's a good chance that we will have other donors, you know, that are willing to match, but we somehow have to have some confidence when we're doing that matchmaking that the person is indeed, you know, bona fide in terms of having some evidence that they're representing truly without having gone into deep detail. So I think in terms of a, you know, the reaction to lie, that's again one of those things that's easier said than done. Fraud doesn't exist unless, you know, due process tells you there's fraud. And so while I agree that there needs to be a way to, you know, punish fraud and lies, we should not assume that that's any easier than getting money. Thanks.
Thank you. Andrew is on the
Andrew, please go ahead.
Sorry, I was on mute. Tijani and I had a nice and long talk yesterday about this, and I think that there is a certain amount of arbitrariness in all of this. We have to, at some point in time, pick a line and say, these are some of our qualifications, because need has many factors and is, to some extent, relative, like poverty, right? So I think that there is also, as we were discussing yesterday, there's also a bit of a push and a pull. We want to be helping people that need the assistance, but we also have the optics, have the public perception of wanting to make sure that the applicant is sufficiently strong as to be able to make it over the long term. And so I think that while we want to, I'm concerned that we don't send a message that gets a lot of our people disqualified or the perception that they're going to be too small or too poor to make this work. That was one thought that I had. Another thought that I had was it was about this this idea of trying to sorry, coffee hasn't kicked in. The idea of trying to have a strong sanction that Eric was talking about. I think that's a great idea. I'm just concerned about the mechanism for making that happen, and the amount of money that it's going to take to have this vetting process. I'm wondering what is the simplest possible mechanism, because I think that in the end is going to be the one that's going to be the most durable. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. If I understood well, Andrew, you mean that we need to fix a high threshold and a low threshold, because people are not able to operate the string. There is no benefit to help them.
Well, that's effectively what that's effectively what we've already described that we're going to do.
Yeah.
What I'm suggesting is that within that, the high and the low threshold are a bit arbitrary. Within that high and low threshold, we want to make it as easy as possible to identify people. And as Eric says, have a bright line for anyone who tries to cheat the system. My only concern about it is that we can get fairly easily tied up in knots in terms of trying to do the evaluation. And so whatever is the easiest way to say, yes, this is an imperfect measure, but this is the measure we're going to use, let's use it, and you are either in or out of this basket, that's my preference. That way also it makes it an easier way for us to do what Eric suggests in terms of the sanctioning people who clearly are trying to cheat.
Thank you.
Okay, any further comments? Hey, Eric, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Tijani, we haven't considered the possibility of having an accounting moment at some point after launch, and yet the registry operators will be going through various accounting moments on a quarterly and also on an annual basis. So the point, the moment of discovery of fraudulent application or misrepresentation of need, whether intentional or unintentional, may best occur a year or so after the point at which assistance is provided. I'm just thinking that accounting later in the life, in the trajectory of startup, is where the discovery of misrepresentation may occur. Thank you very much.
And that's my concern also.
Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I think we have to get to the point sometime soon of starting to put down specifics. We're having this real great general discussion on how do we recognize if people are cheating, and how do we, how do we set the limits? But I think sometime we have to start drafting things, no matter how difficult they are to assess or come up with. I think we have to start putting specifics down so we know what we're talking about. And I don't know what the measure is of how poor do you have to be, or how much cash do you have to be in the bank to be viable. Clearly what we want are organizations that will not likely be able to do this well if we don't help them, but are viable enough to be able to keep the domain running and work on an ongoing basis. And I think either the people on this group or we need to seek outside help, and that's part of our charters, regardless of which charter you look at, to start quantifying this so we have something specific to talk about and either shoot down or agree with. So as much as I think this general conversation is important, I think we have to start putting straw men out of something specific.
This will happen in the few coming days.
I'm hoping so, but
yeah. you will receive, and I will send you an email, specific email to you about it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Any comments? So, if having none, we can move to the next work team. Okay. Thank you, Dejani. So we will wait for the update in the meantime, the mailing list and the document, so we can continue the discussion. Thank you. Now moving to the work team led by Avery about the funding. Hey, Avery.
So as Eric put it several times, if there are resources, and indeed there aren't yet, been talking to a lot of people. Unfortunately, I have not done more on the wiki page. I got those started, and no one else has added to them yet. Hopefully, people who are volunteers in that group will start looking at some of those spaces and do that. I've unfortunately been busy actually making a living, which only happens intermittently in my life these days. So I haven't gotten any writing done. And I don't have that much more to report other than we need to start writing those donor cases and start framing the appeals letters that we'd send out. One thing that has become apparent to me is another thing we have to include in all of this, and we could possibly take some of it out of the milestone. But when I was at the .next meeting last week, now granted these are all entrepreneurs with pockets full of money talking, but it was also people talking about, you know, what you need to apply. And there really seems to be a mindset that says, if you don't have bags full of money, you don't belong in this game. And I think that to some extent that attitude may have, you know, been accepted by some of those who actually have money to donate, but they're looking at it and sort of saying, why would we? You know, and it's not so much the competition that we're worried about, but we just don't believe this can be done without having a war chest of at minimum $500,000. And that was basically the information that was put out in that conference was, if you've got a TLD that no one will object to and will not have to answer any objections and will not have any string contention, that's $500,000 at minimum, and it can go up to millions. So what do you mean when you say helping people financially? Are we talking about helping people to the tune of $500,000? And what business do they have in this if they don't have that? And so that is a mindset that we have to deal with, and we'll have to find a way to discuss and to answer the questions of, because any donor is going to have heard that or will hear that and sort of said, you know, how do we get them to that? How do we get a package together? You know, because that's, I was once a donor for, you know, something else. And basically the person that was putting together the fund had to get like 12 or 13 of us together to show that she had met a particular threshold that was considered the minimum threshold she had to meet in order to be qualified to move forward, in order to have prayer of succeeding with what she was doing. And are we in that same kind of concept where we have to work with an applicant and show them, you know, and basically show that you've got a package now of equivalence of support in kind and monies that get you to that $500,000 equivalent below which people don't believe you have a chance. So it's just a new problem that I've sort of really picked up on in the last week being in California at .next, and it's something I think we need to add to things we discuss in any materials we put out. Thanks.
Okay, I just have a question about this $500,000. It's just about the application itself, or
no? It's basically an assumption, a calculation that various of these companies that are helping people do things and that are or doing it themselves or what have you. But it's a figure that came out of consultants, sort of saying when you look at the money it takes to put together the basic staff, to put together, you know, the application fee, to write the application, to, you know, have the basic agreements in place, et cetera, it'll take that as a minimum, even if you are, or especially if you're already working with a back-end provider, let alone if you're trying to prevent your own. Now, as I say, there's a lot of discussion we can make that shows, yes, but those are at L.A. prices. Those are at L.A. salaries, and those are at leases and rentals, et cetera. But what I'm saying is the argument needs to put together. And we've already done a lot of it once, but it's still the prevailing vision.
So it's mean like the expenses for the application, if you have some service, legal service, et cetera.
And just, you know, the time it takes to get it up, you know, and get it running, et cetera. All of it put together.
Can we have those figures, et cetera? Maybe it will be helpful so we can check them.
I haven't gotten a breakdown. I've just heard people talking the figure, but I can look and see if we can get that breakdown. If I had it, I would certainly have posted it.
Thank you, Avery. So, Eric, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Avery and others, the cost for CAT was the $45,000 to submit the application. There was some cost for developing the application, but it was not borne by the applicant, to the best of my knowledge. And it went to market with a $2,000 marketing budget. So it is a counterexample, a counterexample to the claim that mid six figure capitalization is necessary. For a successful operation. Now, the itemization is something that we really should be doing in the DEF group to get numbers on and choices and the numbers associated with the choices, for instance, the choice between lease and rent, the choice between back-end and non-back-end. Anyway, I'll just leave it at that, that we do have an example that shows that for $50,000 with... actually, $47,000, for although 2,000 of those were in euros, with the cost for the application and the cost for operations forwarded to against future revenues, which is a common form of factoring of receivables, the total cost came in at 1/10 of what the glitterati are bandering about at Kieran's little love fest. Thank you.
Emily, please go ahead.
Yes, I can't get over glitterati at a love fest, but thank you for the image. I was there, and I'm definitely not a glitterati. But anyway, I think Eric, you're absolutely right, and that's what I mean. We've got to build the case, and I think examples like, you know, the one you've given are indeed what we're talking about. I wasn't trying to argue that is a correct figure, but just trying to argue that is a mindset that exists, and it exists among the glitterati, and those are the ones we have to get money from. So, yeah, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Aubrey. Okay, any further comments?
Aubrey, post the links, please, to the wiki.
Sure. As I say, they didn't actually lay out the breakup of the expense, but I'll find any information I can post. It was mostly talk.
No. I mean the wiki that we are working on.
It's in the Confluence one that was already sent out, but I'll send it out again. It's the Confluence one that was set up by Carla, and within that, as soon as you go in, you'll see Team CG there, and that's where I started creating the pages. But it's in the Jazz's wiki page that we've all got. But I'll send it out again, certainly.
Okay, Avery. Don't have any further reports or progress?
Me? Nope.
Yeah, okay. We also had some discussion in the last conf call. I hope that you could listening to the MP3 and enjoying that.
Yeah, no, I haven't yet. I'm sorry.
Okay. We had a lot of discussion about these funding issues. Andrew, please go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to throw out, we talked a little bit last time about diversifying funding sources and about trying to find companies or corporate foundations that might be interested in this, and I wanted to know if anybody had any further thoughts on that. It would strike me that this is an obvious place to go as a co-financer. And I wanted to know who we as a group thought might be obvious people to look to, not just for technical support, but also for a small amount of seed money to get this process going. I take it from radio silence. No thoughts on. Are there any people? Are there any obvious candidates?
Andrew, I didn't actually understand the question. I'm early in my coffee cycle.
No, it's okay. As you could tell from my first comment, I am too. I guess what I was wondering is that trying to get a little bit of money in the door as an indicator, because I think Audrey is right. It's important to try to prime the pump a little bit. And I was just trying to think of who in our world that is already familiar with this process might be a good candidate, whether there's a corporate foundation or something that's relatively close to us. We talked about donors a lot in the first few calls, and I'm wondering, trying to think in terms of other groups. You Aubrey mentioned the fact that there were a lot of people at .next that were well capitalized. I'm wondering if there are any of those well capitalized sources that might be leaned upon to, there's anybody who's expressed any, who we think has expressed any kind of a social purpose that might be a good fit.
If I can respond quickly, I'm putting sort of pressure on a lot of those, and you can figure out who the suspects are that have lots of money. And I've also been, talking to people about, contributions in kind, which is more the DEF cycle than the CG one. And unfortunately, I'm still waiting for that first one that says, yes, and you can put out my name and say I'm going to do this. And I've been pushing on a fair number, but I don't have one that says that yet. And it's both among the normal, people in the GTLD space that have money, but I've also been talking to the various CCTLDs that either have foundations or are looking at foundations. As I think I've mentioned before, their interest tends to be restricted to helping people probably within their own national area, which is not a problem, but then again, it becomes more in the setting up of relationships and not actually bringing in money. They have their own foundations. They're possibly willing to talk about helping, possibly as part of putting together a package, but their focus will be on their own geography.
Okay.
But
so we have the same issue.
Quote yet. And as soon as I do, I will shout it.
Okay. Yeah. Just for what it's worth, if you find that there is some interest but some reticence to be the first one in the pool, let's talk about that, because maybe we can come up with some mechanisms to either get other people in the pool with them or lower their risk in some way? Because I know it is very difficult to be the first one to take on such responsibility.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. Amy, please go ahead.
Thank you. Jeffrey, you were careful not to indicate whether or not you were speaking to ISOC or Ophelios, just to pick one example. That is the distinction between a party that has no profound interest in capturing new applicants and a party that is a back-end provider, or VeriSign for that matter, being in the same boat as Ophelios. So to avoid the complication of in-kind or direct benefit, direct donation from a back-end provider, my suggestion is to approach ISOC separately as a foundation possibility, distinct from the registry operators that currently operate either Gs or Cs, which have their own interests. Some Cs, of course, are interested in becoming G operators as well as their existing operations. Thank you.
Definitely. And, in fact, part of the breakdown that I started working on in the wiki is that one needs a different approach for all of these. So it's safe to say that I've talked to many different varieties of possible donor, from the one with a vested interest in policy to the one with a vested interest in using their services to the vested interest in seeing their country grow. You know, my assumption is everyone's got a vested interest, otherwise they're not doing it. They just vary. Vested interest of being seen as a good guy might be, one if I can find it. But I've been talking to people in all the categories, obviously, separately. And, in fact, the way I was looking at coming up with cases for donors and with funding models is that they are different based upon, exactly what you said.
Thank you, Avery. Any further comments? Okay. I'm not sure. I think Ilan is not here in this call, and I think only Avery and Eric from the technical support for the applicants are present here. Do you have any updates from your work team, or there was any discussion?
Well, I'm drawing a blank at the moment. Who else did you say?
Okay, just because we, for the next work team, which is about the technical support, it's that should be provided the applicant. We don't have Ilan, who is the leader of that work team, but we only have you and Avery now in this call. So I'm not sure if you had already some discussion that report.
I have not. There's been no contact with Elaine. Avery, go ahead.
No, I said that I haven't. I saw Elaine at the Glitterati festival, but I haven't spoken to her about this much.
Okay, thank you. So, I don't think we don't have so much report for this work team. So we can move to the next one, but I think that Tony is not here too. And I think he's the only member of that work team. Okay, so we have the last work team. Oh, Eric, please go ahead.
Yeah, could we take down the unionized charter and put up the agenda of the call? Thank you.
That'd be nice.
So, the next work team, lead it by Andrew about the IDN.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if I was muted or not.
Yes, Andrew, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Rick. So I made an effort to reach out to some different people in the IDN space based on the conversations that we have had to this point, trying to put some more specifics around the way that we think this is likely to play out, the kind of models that we think, actual use models that we think people are likely to go for, right? And so a couple of things I found very interesting, not surprising, I guess, but just confirmation from the user perspective, that there was a fair amount of more demand based on what the conversations that I had. People seem to think that there was a lot of demand for IDN, and one of the questions was whether we are assuming that in this new GTLD world that everything that comes forward is going to be a Latin script new GTLD, or whether there will be some things that are either that are just IDNs that are pushed forward in this round. And I wasn't sure what the answer was, and I'd be interested in knowing what the community thought. And given that a good piece of the world that is, so that's question number one for the group. Question number two is, given that the world is in no small measure not Latin script using as a primary means of communication, do we wish to have some sort of a cutout or a reserve for people who wish to do IDNs as part of our work, given that we're really trying to reach those underserved markets, communities, people, applicants? So that was the second question, and I'd love to get everybody's thoughts, and then I have a couple more observations. Is that clear?
Thank you, Andrew. Eric, please go ahead.
Andrew, if you could restate that as simple questions, that would be good. Thank you.
Okay, sure. The first question was whether through this process that we're assuming that most of the new GTLDs that are coming forward are going to be Latin script, and if we are, given that we are trying to reach out to underserved communities and applicants, should we, as a matter of our efforts, think about reserving some part of our support specifically for the IDN community? Make sense? The concern with one of the people that I spoke with was that we would end up supporting everybody but IDN.
Okay,
you
want to
go
ahead
and
call on
people?
Avery and Clue and Eric, please. Avery, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I think, you know, when we get funding, I think the funding can and will be targeted for specific purposes. I don't think that this group should make any decisions on ASCII versus IDN. I think if we get a donor that says, I'm only willing to give for IDN, and then we'll probably actually get them specific, I'm only willing to give for IDN in script/language X, I think that we have to deal with that. But I don't think that, you know, we should say, should we get a bucket of funds from, you know, World Bank, ISOC, or whatever, we should decide to reserve some of them for IDNs, because that was part of the family of characteristics. It certainly wasn't something that we necessarily decided, nope, this has more support than any of the others, and therefore it gets a quotient. And I'd be, even though I definitely do want to see IDNs, I still think there can be very worthy causes that are not IDN. so I would not differentiate among any undifferentiated help we get. Thanks.
Cheryl here. Just following up from what you said, Avery, it struck me that there may be opportunity to leverage support either in-kind or cold hard cash donations. If we were to say that there is an ability to put a fence around some of this input so that it is specifically purposed. So I think we might have a marketing opportunity for the concept if we can say that people are able to make the differentiation preference themselves rather than us do it for them.
Okay. So, Cheryl, if I'm understanding you correctly, what you're saying is that this may be something that we use in our pitch.
Yeah. I'd be pitching it because, for example, there's particular types of funding that you'll find that is focused by definition of the group that we may or may not, successfully approach. That would have to be targeted in Oceania or Asia Pacific or whatever. I think this is a good thing, and I think pitching IDNs as one of these opportunities for growth in the new space for both GTLDs and IDN CCTLDs is a very good thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Eric,
Thank you, Andrew. Andrew, I think whoever provided you with this responsive question was not contributing to our work. The issue of allocation or pre-allocation presumes, A, that we have resources, which presently we don't yet have, but it also doesn't actually advance us in any specific direction. That is, we didn't get any response from the question, which is illuminating to us. So I don't actually think the question is mature enough, is ripe to be asked. Thank you.
Okay, fair enough. I hear all of you. That's all very helpful. Certainly take it under advisement. I agree with you, Cheryl, based on what I've heard so far, that this is a selling point, but I understand where you're coming from, Eric, and Avery, and I think that those are all fairly, they all seem rational points to me. The other piece, just to finish up my little report, the other piece that has come through fairly clearly, and it builds off of something that Eric mentioned, is that there's an awful lot of people who say, for me, I am not a one script. I'm not interested. I can't do what I need to do in one script only. And so IDNs would be part of something. It would be a part of a multiple script kind of thing if we're trying to reach out to a community or to an NGO company, anything like that. And one of the questions that we talked about yesterday, that Johnny and I talked about yesterday, was this idea of at what point do you become needy? For example, if you could conceivably do in one, but your target audience is many, is multiple scripts, do you not qualify then as needy for in terms of achieving what your aims are? But the big takeaway for me was I was surprised to the extent to which people said that they were really multiple script identified. And I think that's partly because a lot of the groups that people seem to think might apply are people who already have some web presence, and that some web presence is largely in Latin scripts. And so they'd want to keep that and move to whatever is their local or their regional. Because people actually have these two or sometimes three different identities. Anyway, that's what I got.
Okay. Thank you, Andrew. Eric, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is to the group, not simply directed to Andrew. I've sent several notes to the group mailing list on the issue of use cases and received no feedback. Thank you.
Okay. Any further comments? Okay, hitting on. I think that we covered all work teams, and then I think we can adjourn this call for today. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining today's call, and so see you on the next call on Friday.
And on the wiki. Thank you.
Yeah, working in the wiki and exchange mail in the mailing list. Thank you, Avery.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Cheers, everyone.
Bye. Bye.